Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B. Today's guest is Sid Newby, 38 years of career experience, retired battalion chief with Wichita Fire Department. Sid didn't grow up wanting to be a firefighter. He was a college student at the time that needed money, and luckily for him had a buddy who was a firefighter that asked him if he ever thought about joining the fire service. Sid thought about it, applied, and got on his first attempt. Once he was in, as he states, it was the best thing in the world that ever happened. From various individuals I've talked to, they all describe Sid as a firefighter's chief, a man who held standards and wanted everyone within his battalion to uphold and value those standards, believing in servant leadership. I truly hope the listeners can tune and hone in on the gems and nuggets Sid speaks within this interview. I thoroughly enjoyed our conversation and hope you all do as well. With that, I present Sid Newby.
My name is Sid Newby. I was on the job 38 years, retired as a battalion chief, got on the job. It wasn't a cool story or anything. I came back from college broke. I wasn't graduated from college yet. Needed a job, went and seen a high school buddy of mine that was a fireman. Talking to him out on the back slab of the firehouse, he says, "Hey, why don't you be a fireman?" I go, "I don't know nothing about being a fireman." He goes, "Well, you work one day and get 2 days off. That sounds cool." I think, wow, I can go to school, graduate, finally get my degree, which was in education, to be a teacher. Okay. And then I can, you know, move on. And so I applied and got the call, went and did my interview, and got on the job. And it's the best thing ever in the world that ever happened to me. I mean, it's the best job that I could have had. I went ahead and went back to school and graduated, but I never even thought about teaching anymore. You know, it's just all about going to work, and, you know, it's just a great, you know how it is, a great place to work. So did that, you know, I had no previous fire service experience. You know, I went to the firehouse like you do when you're in grade school, you know, take a tour. Ended up being the same firehouse I was assigned to when I first came on the job. So that was kind of cool. And I knew nothing. I mean, blank. So I go into the academy. I go test, do all my training, all that, which was funny back then how they used to do the, you know, before CPAS test and all that, how they used to do it. And, you know, I didn't even know that I was supposed to have my bedding when I went to the firehouse. Nobody told me anything. You know, so I get to work and I have no food, I have no bedding. You know, these guys are all a bunch of mean bastards. And, you know, that we worked through it. And I had to call my mom, bring me some bedding, because I didn't know. Well, you know, they have these beds, but I didn't know what to have my stuff. So I had no clue. I was left-handed, which was back in the day when before we got into the real the tactics and everything, knots were a big deal. Had to know knots, all kinds of knots. And I'm left-handed, and I'm not learning any of the way these guys are learning how to tie knots. Buddy of mine, whose dad was a captain, he was a legacy. He was left-handed, and he tried showing me some things, not very well. And I had when I came on, my assigned lieutenant was a gruff, you know, not very nice person. But I always got to give him credit. He learned to tie knots left-handed. To teach me. So always got to give props to him for that. Wasn't the nicest guy in the world, but, you know, he did what I needed to do. He helped me. So anyway, you know, got on the job first night of fire the first night. I don't know what I'm doing. I mean, I woke up out of a dead sleep, and, you know, I'm going to red lights and siren on the back of a fire engine going to this house fire. My lieutenant, a different guy who since passed away, huge man, great fireman. He stuck my hand in the pocket of his canvas bunker coat and drug me through this fire with a line. I mean, you know, there wasn't a whole lot of teaching going on. We had, you know, we'd done stuff in the academy, but, you know, I'm waking up in the middle of the night. I don't even know where I am. And after it was over, he said, "Hey, kid, what'd you think of that?" I goes, "I have no idea what just happened." You know, so starting from that, going clear through and being able to teach and try to mentor other people has been a great thing for me. So
Okay.
that's kind of a start.
Okay. All right. And with that, I'm assuming you applied it at Wichita the first time and got on.
Yes.
Okay. All
Yeah, I
right.
didn't apply anywhere else. I mean, I didn't know nothing about guys trying to go other places, or I had no involvement for anybody to mentor me on, you know, hey, you might want to apply here or there or whatever. You know, I was just a college kid that thought this is like a pretty cool job, and you know, after talking to my buddy, you know, that to apply. So yeah, I wish I was the only place.
Okay. All right. And
It's
so,
still go ahead. I'm sorry.
no. Go ahead. Go ahead.
It still amazes me though that, and that started about 10 years ago or so. I would, you know, I used to have to explain Wichita, where Wichita is, and it was kind of at the beginnings of a lot of social media stuff and all that. And I felt almost embarrassed to, you know, teach at FDIC or whatever and explain Wichita, what Wichita is, because I thought most people think it's a, you know, out on the prairie in a sod hut or something, you know. And now it amazes me that people know Wichita. When I go teach other places, people, yeah, we know what you guys are doing work, you know. So it's pretty cool.
So I want to talk about that part. The transition to now what most people know Wichita is, was it like that when you came on?
No, definitely not. I mean, I don't know, I don't even know where to start. We had Elkhart combination spud in, spud out nozzles. You know, we had guys that lived and died by a fog pattern, you know, and got burnt to, you know, burnt to hell and steam burns inside the structure. Wichita was really good at first do work, you know, room and contents fires. They were good because they were fast. Get in there, get it out, get a search, you know. And it's the same old thing. I don't blame those guys, but you don't know what you don't know. I mean, we were just doing it the same way Wichita has done it forever. And until a group of us started, I mean, you know, pre-connects off the back, our water supply line was just for hydrant, not stretching, you know, stretching off the back, using static loads or anything like that. And except for a group of us that started going other places and taking classes, you know, and going, hey, this is a better way. And having that transition to where the first part of my career was, you know, we're doing things, but if it gets out, if we don't get it put out fast, you know, we're going to have a problem. And we didn't do truck work per se, you know, cutting a hole was very rare. And I think some of that goes back to our past that we had a fire, and we're getting ready to have the anniversary on Friday of the Yuengling Chevrolet fire, which kind of proceeds. I've talked to the chief out of Chief Dunn out of New York about that. There was different big fires that have been similar. So like the Hackensack fire in New Jersey. Yuengling was before that. Yuengling was in 68, November 21st of 68. Had four firemen die. Roof, a auto parts store, arched roof, truss roof collapsed. The fire had been burning for 45 minutes before they called the fire department. They were trying to get the new cars, all the cars out of the car dealership. So nobody called the fire department. End up by the time we get there, crews are getting up in the mezzanine. It's a mezzanine fire, trying to get to the where all the parts are, try to get the fire out. Roof collapse. Chief of department, on night of his anniversary with his wife, is inside with three other members. A lot of other people were in there. Roof collapses. Guys get dug out. The chief and three other firefighters passed, died. And so it seems like that event, people started, we quit getting up on roofs. And the roof crews got off. They could tell it was getting spongy and they got off. But anyway, it seemed like we didn't do any vent work at all. I mean, if they told us to do vent work, they'd go, you cut a hole. Like, you want me to cut a hole? Is that what you're telling me, Chief? Because we just, we had chainsaws and stuff, but we just didn't do it. And so we had tough, good, aggressive firefighters, but they took a beating. I mean, we all took a beating because we're going in there without a vented. And so when we made this transition, we had, luckily, our chief of department retired, went back east, became a chief out there, learned truck work and how truck work works properly. And also our training chief here, they took a chance and listened to us and say, hey, we can do this. And deputy chief operations did not want us to do it. And the chief had to say, you got to let these guys roll with this because it does work. And so a lot of the staunch old guys, once they've got into a fire and they vented it and it all lifted on them, they couldn't believe how much better it was. And they could see what they're doing. Get a search done quick, get to the fire if they haven't put water on it yet. So it was a great thing that, we could have that transition getting into truck work, getting better machines, low hose beds, static loads off the back, get rid of the pre-connects. And it was so much different than what we have been doing, but it was so much better. And it ruffled a lot of feathers with some of the older guys. They didn't like the change. And and I was in their peer group, so they thought I was crazy. Why are you doing this? And these guys are nuts. Well, because it works. We had a fire. I was a chief Christmas, New Year's morning, 6 a.m. at a apartment complex. And it's burning. So you think immediately, 6 a.m., New Year's Eve morning, a lot of, people in there partying the night before. It's going to be rough. And I'm the chief. My crew, first new crews are in there. Got a vital good piece of information. They look like garden style apartments. End up being they were townhouses. So vertical versus horizontal as far as firefight and the search, which was a great piece of information by one of the company officers. And so the deputy chief, the division chief gets there, who's the shift commander. And he's sitting with me because we're in the car looking at it. I'll get to that later about being in the car. And the guys get up on the roof, icy roof. My captain, who's now battalion chief, Matt Bowen, he vents it, fire coming out the roof, 10 or 20 feet. And the chief said, I'm going to pull them out. I'm going to pull them out. I go, it's let them give it 30 seconds. They're doing their job. Because I'm in command, so he could take it from me if he wants. He outranks me, but he's not doing it. He's telling me to do it. I'm not, We wait 30 seconds. It lifts. It turns to steam. Fires out. And it's only contained to that one townhouse. And I got to give him credit also. He was totally against vertical ventilation and traditional truck work. And the next staff meeting we had, he said, hey, I didn't think it would work. I went to this fire. I saw how it worked. It was great. So, got to give him credit for that. But, it took for the whole transition. I don't know. Time escapes me sometimes, probably 10 or 15 years to make all this come to where it is today. From the early 2000s, started our own fire school, a little fire school called Wichita Hot, and brought in, guys. Good people we already knew from going to FDIC and Firehouse Expo and all that, and saying, look, we don't have much money, but here's what we can do. And, thanks, props to those guys for coming. And so it's turned out to be I'm very happy on how it all turned out so far. Operationally, Wichita is a great department, better than it's ever been. So.
After a couple of years under your belt, did you decide to go to a different firehouse? Has most of the firehouses in Wichita been busy, or no?
Well, back then, they moved you around for different reasons. You didn't stay in a firehouse. It was very rare to stay in a firehouse in Wichita. We had one member that, he did all 34 years in one busy firehouse. But back then it would move you around. Like they need people here, they need people there, and they would move you. I mean, I got bounced around. I was at a pretty slow station. I finally get downtown to a busy place. Ends up chief. I guarantee it was all said and done. They were going to move this one guy to a busy firehouse. He walks by the watch booth where I'm at. I'm on watch that day, and he looks down at me and he call, then he comes and calls me to the chief's office. He goes, "Hey, we're going to move you to Station 10," which was a great firehouse, very busy single engine house. I said, "Okay, chief." I said, and I'd only been there a short time. I said, "Why are you moving me? We're going to bring in a good man." "Oh, okay."
Blunt.
I said, "Where am I going?" He said, "Tens." I said, "Be there tomorrow." Because it was great. I was a brand new driver. This place, it back then, and the whole cultural thing. Back then, we had to make our bed by shift change was 8 o'clock. Bed had to be made just like in the military style bed making. We bounce a quarter off of it, seams tucked in, everything. You couldn't even sit on your bed till 8 o'clock that night. I mean, one time I was a rookie and I sat on the bed to put my shoes on and I got yelled at. I mean, really? And we couldn't watch TV except for noon hour, the noon hour, and then after 5 o'clock. I go to Tens, got a great captain. Who he would have been a, I mean he was a fire buff, huge man. He was great, and he TV all on all day. You could take a nap whenever you wanted to because we were going to be out. We're going to be out all night. So it was a great place to be, and end up years later I bought the original Engine 10 from 1949 Mack open cab fire truck. So I got it. So
Awesome.
that was just a sidebar thing. That was cool. Brings
Okay.
back some good memories. But yeah, I went. So I bounced around, went to tens, went back. Then they were moving 10 to a different battalion. Back then we called them districts. So they moved some of us guys back in to stay in Battalion 1. I go to ones. I end up getting promoted out of there. Had just less than 10 years on to a lieutenant. And I moved down south into 2's battalion and worked there mainly at firehouse number 2, another very busy house where Mark Meshack, who you've had on, is out now. And he was one of my lieutenants there later. And I was a lieutenant there, end up being a lieutenant, a captain, and a chief out of Firehouse too. But so they moved me around a little bit. Got promoted to captain. Went to a pretty slow firehouse in the industrial area of town. I mean, when they had a fire, it was a good fire, but not very busy. But had a really good senior man, and we're still good friends today. About 10 years older than me. He was a rookie at the England fire in 68. He's 10 years older than I am. So we had a strike. Firefighters struck in 78 for wages. And that, and we had a firefighter death right at the same time that they were good friends, that he left the job for 10 years and came back and then finished out another 20. So a great wealth of information. He's on my. I have a Mount Rushmore a fireman, and he's on there, along with some other guys. But anyway, great group of guys. And I told them guys would go in there and they want to go somewhere busy. Well, so these guys were getting shit on, really. I mean, the guy'd come in, stay for 2 or 3 months, and he was gone, as far as a captain, leader of the firehouse, and. So when I came in there, I committed to him for 3 years. I said, "I'm not going to go anywhere, and 3 years we'll see." But you see, I said, we're going to make this work. And guys coming in and out different, but me and Chuck there the whole time. And Chuck did the classic senior man thing that, you know, he handled everything at the firehouse. I handled the alarms, the paperwork, the training, and all that. And it was great. I mean, he was a classic senior man. We have some today that's kind of coming back now. We kind of lost it for a while. And I had another guy that had the same amount of time as Chuck almost as far as on the job. And we had to become a roving station where we'd have to rove guys out, however you guys call it there. And this other senior guy came and said, "Hey, why come I have to rove and Chuck doesn't have to?" And I said, "Well, because Chuck's a senior man." He says, "Well, I'm a senior man too." I said, "No, you're not." I said, "Every day, especially on Saturdays, was our big day to check all the equipment. I mean, we check it every morning, but that was the big day. Saturday, we'd even on over the top, big day." And I said, "I have to ask you three times if you've checked your, pumped your engine to make sure it all everything's going." And that's, I ask you in the morning, I ask you around noon. Now it's 2 o'clock. And I got to tell you, and then I have to order you to go out there and do it. I said, "You're not a senior man. You don't take care of nothing as far as going around. A lot of personnel things that I shouldn't have to deal with, because Chuck handles, because, he knows I'm going to take care of him and he's going to take care of me." So I said, "You're roving because you're not a senior man. You might have seniority on the job. You're not a senior man." So anyway, I kind of got on a little rabbit hole there, but it just a good thing about th that's the it's a non senior man is a great position. I mean, and it's a position that we need to keep and make it, keep that tradition going.
Definitely. Okay. It sounds like you waited a while before you decided to promote. So with that, I'm going to ask you, do you believe individuals should get some time under their belt in specific positions before deciding to move up the ranks?
Yeah, back then it was a little different. So time and experience meant more. I
Okay.
don't know if that makes any sense or not.
Yes.
If you got promoted to lieutenant before 10 years, that was pretty good. I mean, if and then if you made captain in less than 15 to 20 years, that was good. That was, because with, they went by time and grade meant which hopefully equaled experience, to know what to do, on alarms. So it was different back then. I put a lot of pressure on myself. I started testing early, which they gave points for seniority for time on the job. So that always hurt me. But I started early with about, I don't know, early for back then, 7 years or so. There's now guys doing it at 4 years. I mean, testing. But so I had one buddy of mine that did it right. He waited till the full seniority was 10 years for taking the lieutenant's test. And so he took it one time and did well after he had his 10-year on, and he got promoted. So I put a lot of pressure on myself, and I got promoted like 4 or 5 months before I had 10 years in the job. And then I got promoted pretty early to a captain. I was only a lieutenant 3.5 years, so I had like 13 years on, and I got promoted to captain. So I thought I knew a lot. I really didn't. That's where Chuck grew me up. Chuck showed me a lot of things as a senior man that, he grew me up. And but he hated training, and I was a trainer guy. So he'd make fun of me all the time. I said, "Okay, they called it back then, training time was called school. We're gonna have school. School, school, school," he used to say, always ask, "Well, we're gonna do it." And one thing about it, then he would do it. Here's a little thing about peer pressure. So I mean, I'm the there's only one guy that has less time than me in my firehouse, and I'm the captain. I mean, it was an old firehouse. Had guys, they had five, six, 10 years on me in the firehouse. And so I kind of forgot where I was going with it, but it was having that transition to where they would say, back then the captain wouldn't do any training. Well, you're
Okay.
part of the group.
Right.
But they would, you know, and a lot of time it's just reading out of a communication manual or a training manual, not going out and putting our stuff on. Well, we're going out, and so this other older senior guy I was talking about, he didn't really want to, he wouldn't put his stuff on, but he saw me putting my gear on. So he thought, well, if he's doing it, I said, I'm doing it just like, you know, we're all part of the group. We all have a different job to play here. And, you know, it's like I tell guys now, if you haven't stretched line in, you know, a couple of weeks, if you're on a nozzle, then you're not good at your job. You know, we should be, there's no reason not to go out and stretch line every day. It takes 15 minutes to go out and charge a line, flow water, pump operator does his job. We move around on the slab a little bit. You know, it's, and then everybody's done their job. I mean, 15 minutes, you have it back in the truck and, you know, you're done. It doesn't have to be a 4 hour class. But so that was a big transition that, and Wichita back in the early 1900s was great. They went to different fire conferences and brought back different techniques and stuff, and it kind of died out. And then the group, my peer group, and guys younger than me brought it back. And so it was a great thing. So the time on the job thing, it was, for me, it was a little early. I mean, I thought I, you know, but then I was a captain forever. And I was a captain for 14, 15 years,
Okay.
which was good. I bet two best positions on the job for me is either riding the back or being the captain of the machine, being the officer of that machine. And two best positions for me. And so, you know, that was I don't know, it was a good time. It was a good transition. I think I got promoted late to battalion chief. I really kind of didn't think it was going to happen anyway. I had 29 years on.
Wow.
If you're going to be a chief, you should really be a chief around, I think if I was an administrator, I would do it at 20 years,
Okay.
because hopefully you got the experience and now you got some time before that guy. Our department, we top out at 30 years. So, as far as our pension. So you at least get some good out of the guy. Now, I stayed another 10 years after I got promoted because I love the job. I didn't think I could retire because, you know, I didn't know if I could retire. We can talk about that later. But so I was a captain for a long time and really enjoyed it. And it was a hard transition going from a captain to a battalion chief as far as the training goes. And I had a deal where I developed where I always hated to come in as an officer every day to the firehouse. And what are we going to train on today? Well, you can only stretch a hose so many times. I mean, you should do it often, but different scenarios. And so I made up a, we worked 24 48s. And I made up a deal where every shift, every Monday we work, which is every third Monday, we're going to do medical stuff. Every Tuesday, we're going to do truck work, ladder, even if it's ladders on an engine, you know, you're going to do ladders, you're going to do some kind of forcible entry. Every Wednesday, we stretched line, all kinds of different hose line evolutions. Thursdays, we, what did we do on Thursday? We did radio stuff, radio reports on air, you know, ICS stuff, incident command. Fridays, we did big water stuff like deck guns, 2.5, master stream work. On Saturdays, we did search, residential, large area, you know, maydays, vent drill, ventilation drills. Then Sunday was a team meeting, you know, like a round table at the kitchen table. What's going on? What's everybody think? We had this, heard about this fire last week in Chicago. This is what happened, you know, talking about kind of a, do that kind of stuff. So that helped me have a basis that every shift we work, this is what we're going to cover. And I kind of carried that on to the battalion chief's level. And but I had a real hard transition with the battalion chief thing of I've got 5 or 6 firehouses. I've got 50 to 60 guys, and I know some of them aren't good at their job. And when I had 5 or 6 guys when I was a company officer, I knew they were squared away because I could wrap my hand around that. I couldn't wrap my arms around 50 or 60 guys. Are they ready? And I really struggled the first 6 months doing that. And so what I came up with was I made a deal where every 6 weeks I'd make out a lesson plan, show them exactly, I'd email them to every member. I had everybody's email, not just the company officers, so they couldn't say, well, you didn't, I'm gonna everybody. And say we're gonna do a 2.5, 2-story house fire, person's trap, second floor. I give them the exact same. I mean, I'm not gonna screw anybody. I'm telling them what we're gonna do the drill on. And we're gonna have 2 units show up. One's gonna be first due, the other one's gonna be second due. Then we're gonna switch it, and do the same scenario all over again. So I sent it out to them, and so it was rough the first couple times I did that because some of them, you could tell they didn't do it. And so I get, and it's not the guy's fault. It's the company officer's fault. It's the captain's fault. I get that captain by himself and I chew his ass out. I said, look, I said, how much easier can this be? I told you 6 fucking weeks ago, sorry,
No, you're good.
that we're going to do this. We're going to do this and this is why we're doing it. Same, I'm gave you the exact scenario. And then, you guys suck. And so I would tell him, I said, you go home. But next shift, we're going to do it again, and we'll do it every shift until you get it right. And piss some guys off. I said, if you went out, and I did this when I first went around to talk to the company officers when I made chief. I said, this is where I'm going, and if you went out, I'll find you a spot. But this is where we're going. And I made notes every day where I'd put articles from fire engineering or FDTN from fire notes or firehouse, and what I, just different fires going on, talking about the job. And and then from that later on, there was a while there that nobody was really, our deputy chief operations was sick and was off work for a while, going through some rough stuff. So nobody's really minding the store. So me and a friend of mine, John Turner, who's a chief, retired now, he's in a neighboring department, we could kind of do it. Everybody could kind of do what we wanted in your own battalion. So we made arrival orders, which before we did not have. We had to Mother May I command to where the first engine stretched in. Take a pre-connect right in front of the house where the because we weren't doing truck work. We had that was another thing we all totally had to change. And everybody else would stay back. I mean, nobody's getting the water, nobody's getting the search until the second due officer was supposed to be to take command and run it. And it just didn't, it could be so much better. It didn't go as well as it could be. So me and John derived made first due arrival orders, and for all the first due units, and first we had a squad concept back then where you had like a pickup truck and an engine and a house if it was a two engine house, two piece house, and so they were stretching the line. So there's 2 officers and 3 guys, and they're stretching and going in. Officers, one officer's trying to get a look in the rear, on the other 2 sides of the house in the rear. The other officer's going in with the crew and driver's getting the water. And first due truck, they're going to do a search or vent, whatever they just deems necessary at the time. And then, work from there. Second due engines help make sure they got the water stretched second line. So we got a lot of that done, and you know, people think from other battalions that we're off the rails. I mean, you know, but nobody's making a stop.
Right.
And so fast forward 10 years from that, now that's arrival orders. Those same arrival orders pretty much are what is what every unit does or battalion does in Wichita now. It's operational. So yeah, it was a cool thing to see turn around. You know, I had a guy, you know, one time I had a fire and I'm making assignments and I see the guy pull up in his engine. He gets out, so lets his sweats on. He has to put his gear on and get to me. Well, how long does that take? You know, I mean, I need you right now. I don't need you. So back then, you know, the old car thing, the chief was in the car. And so I would, if I wasn't first or second due engine, when I was a captain, we'd put all our stuff on and I'd walk up to the chief and I wouldn't make him roll his window down or bother him, but I'd give him two, you know, engine two. And then we're standing there, we got all our gear, and we got equipment. And he'd always roll down his window and say, "Hey, Sid, I need you to stretch a line, you know, to the rear." "Got it, chief." And we're going to work. We're passing everybody else that got there before us because we're right there and we're ready, and he could see us. Didn't bother him. And so that was one good thing I liked about, and why, you know, as far as the job is, I always wanted to be that go-to company. Never wanted to be the slug company that were, you
Right.
know, chief rolls down the window, he knows I'm going to get it done, or tell him what I need to get it done. So that was a cool transition for us, is going to that. And then the whole chief thing of being in the car, that's a whole nother topic that we had to fight and won to a degree. So
So while we're on it, I'll hit on it and I'll ask you. So not too long ago, I had Chief Pressler on,
yeah.
and he talked about it, because I genuinely want to know people's thought processes on why they believe or do things the way they do. I am a proponent where I think it can be both ways.
It can.
If the chief arrives on scene and he has a awesome viewing of the structure and personnel and he needs to stay in his vehicle, cool. But to me, there are some times where, depending on the order of arrival of the chief, if he's blocked in, if apparatus are blocking his best advantage point, me at least, I would like to see the chief get out of his vehicle, maybe complete his own 360, and then get back in the car, or go find a spot where you could be by yourself if you have your accountability board, your radio, whatever you're doing, and you do your stuff from there. But then I was also asked, well, how do you prevent personnel from coming up to the chief and bothering him? And my reply was discipline. You train on it. Like, if you see the chiefs at a location, don't go up to them. Stage, announce that you're there. And then if he gives you an assignment, he gives you an assignment. But what's your take on that?
Okay, so for years, the second due engine in our department took command, which is usually a captain. And so that was cool because you're usually laying the water and you're right there where you can kind of see what's going on, but it was still, but you know, you knew incident command, but you didn't have to deal with it much because as soon as the chief gets there, he's going to take it and you're going to go to work because you want to go to work.
Right.
And but then it got to a point where we brought in a lot of different incident command. They were big into incident command stuff, but that was about all they were into, like some Brunicini type theories. And so I'm in the front of this house seeing what's going on. I'm in command. All of a sudden the chief gets there. Well, he was late, you know, because he is where he is. He's a block down the street. And now he's telling me, "Okay, I'll take command, come to my vehicle." So I got this great viewpoint of what's happening. And now I gotta walk back, sit with him, and I can't see nothing. You know, I can't have any verbal communication, which is the best way to make an assignment, in my opinion. And So that was terrible, so because the chiefs never got out of their vehicles. So and then there is they are where they are. They can't see what's happening. So, hey, and who has the most? Who should have the most experience? That chief should. Where, hey, this is starting to bow a little bit. Or, hey, I don't like the way that fire looks in the rear. Or guys aren't doing what you expect them to do, which is commander's intent, which we can talk about in a minute. But and it comes down to a point where what as incident commander, what's your comfort zone? A lot of guys like to cocoon themselves in there to where they got their board and they have their radios, and then if they can see, that's even better. And as a new incident commander, that is good because if whatever it takes for you to not be stressed out and flow and know what to do. But it got to the point where, our deputy chief or division, our deputy chief still wanted us to be in the vehicle. So I would drive like a madman across, wherever this fire is. Not good, but it worked. And then they used to make fun of me because I'd beach the buggy in the front yard.
Okay.
Whatever it took. They're stretching line around me, laughing at me. Lucky I'm not gonna get my truck burned up. But I want to see what's going on. If I have to stay in this truck, then I want to see what the hell's going on. And then, guys, and that's where I taught them the discipline thing too, because when I learned it with when I was a captain, they'd come up and I see them, but I don't necessarily have to. I don't want them coming up because they're a friend of mine and rolling,
Right.
hey, what do you think? Well, I'm trying to
Right.
put this fucking fire out.
Right.
So it's whatever works for you, but you got to have. When we first went back to truck work, I would pull up, I'd get a spot across the street in a driveway. Perfect. Here comes the truck. Park right in the front, which I was a fan of. That I was one of the advocates for. Now I can't see nothing. So I'd get out and I'd go sit in the, I'd go because, the rule was still to be, in a vehicle. I would get take my command board out and my radios, and I would go sit in the truck because the truck was in the front yard. So I'm in a vehicle. I'm just not in my vehicle. So then it got to the point where John and I, me and John did a thing off the hook. We were started getting out of the truck and standing in the front yard. And nobody screwed with us because we're chiefs. No other battalion chief, I tell them, yeah, screw yourself. I'm doing it my way. You do your fires, I do my fires. And there was a transition to where the deputy chief, the ops chief, apparently nobody told him or they didn't, or he, she let it go, So it worked well. I mean, the only time I got asked about it, we had a fire one time in an area, a two-story house. Fire's going pretty good. I get there and I'm a ways away because I wasn't in my battalion. I get out and go to the front of the house and I'm making assignment. I'm making verbal assignments. Guys walking up and, hey man, I need you to go to the second floor. You're going to be division two, blah, blah, blah. And so get back later, the deputy asked me about, how come there's no communication? How come you guys, what happened? Couldn't hear what was going on. So I was in the front yard, having verbal, which nobody can argue against verbal communication is the best way.
Right.
And I would tell them, and I write it down. We made our command boards used to be huge. I mean, this big old thing. And we made smaller ones, 8 by
Okay.
11, to where I could put it on a clipboard. So I got it right there, and I had it already made out to where I could have everybody where they needed to be. And for my comfort level, I'd been a chief for a while that I was comfortable doing that. If it needed something to where this is a big deal of some sort, like multiple alarm fire or whatever. Yeah, I see the value of being somewhere where you can close to the fire scene, but have it, have that discipline. You know, I love it how FDNY does it, and a lot of different companies do in the bigger cities, to where they have the command board and they have an area. And if you look at the pictures, nobody's just walking up there milling around. There's these three or four chiefs. They're talking about what's going on, talking to another chief, and you know, they're leaving those guys alone. And that's, to me, that's the best of all worlds. If you can do it, you know, in proximity to watch what's going on, but how not have a lot of people bothering you. You know, I carried two radios. One radio that I would be on the TAC channel. The other radio would be in my pocket, muted down. It was the ops channel, command channel. And I really didn't need that unless I needed to call for more stuff. You know, my big deal was, once you leave the firehouse, you stay on the TAC channel. You know, you shouldn't be. Used to be we had to talk on two different channels when we arrived on scene, and it was confusing, and guys would be on the wrong channel. And now, you know, well, where's engine five? You know, well, because they're on the command channel and not on the TAC channel. So we said, you know, go into the fires, you stay on, get on the TAC channel. That's another change we did that messed a lot of people up until we, you know, it got used to it as far as what battalion you were in. So if I, and another thing, we had run sheets every day at the headquarter house. They'd print out a run sheet to where it showed me what, who my players are, you know, of what firehouses and who's working. And so that way, if I have somebody from a different battalion working as a captain, you know, I'd call them, hey, this is how we do when we were making this transition. This is how we work. This is what we do. And I'd send them my notes, you know, and have like a little bit of a, you know, to help them catch up with how we're going to do it. That, because back, because you know, they were still doing it the traditional staging way, maybe where they were from. So, but to know that, okay, I got a good guy, a good crew today at five. I've got kind of a weak crew at seven. You know what I'm saying? You look at your players, it's just like sports. You know, I'm going to know who my guys are that day. And I would highlight each one of the captain officers on my run sheet to know, these are my players. You know, this is who I got. This is who I don't have today. And it was, it's how I wrapped my brain around being a boss, as far as a chief. And it worked out well. Like Mike Lombardo taught me something very well a long time ago. He had a five, he'd hold up his hand, five things. First line, search. Second line, vent exposures. So I've stood in the front yard of many a house, and when I had just a gap in the time, you know, I would look at my hand and make sure I had those five things done. The only thing I added to that for me was water, which should be done anyway, but water and command. So those are the, but I've sat in my front yard many times at five things. And that's, you know, and just by going to FDTN, I used to teach at FDTN with Bob and Mike and Timmy Klett and a bunch of guys, and learned so much there. No egos, you know, just good firemen. And the my most accomplished thing of my career was Mike Lombardo had me be his safety line guy for his search classes. So that's what I always brag about. I said, you know, Mike Lombardo was the fireman of firemen back in the 80s and 90s, as far as, you know, he's on the front cover of Firehouse and Fire Engineering. And, you know, he was just a, and never an ego, never, no ego. And just, you know, for him to be able to hang around with him and Bob and talk shop, and we've taught together for quite a few years, that it's been, it was a good thing, good experience.
With that, how important would you say it is for either new members coming in or current members of whatever organization to have those mentors, to have those individuals or individual that can teach you things that can either help further your career or help further your knowledge?
It's very important. You know, you got the internet. It's better now if it's guided right with social media. because you can learn some things on your own that you before we just couldn't do. But to me, it's, and even there's, and I call it we are the 1 percenters or 5 percenters. A lot of firefighters, they're working two jobs and got a family and they can't go to conferences or do a lot of things. But with social media, but that helps. And also just finding them on the job. We used to work in a slow house. You would try to get to a, I would go work shift exchanges with guys in a busy house to try to get that experience and try to have those mentors. And mentors has no rank. It can be a, it can be someone with seniority, but whatever rank you want it to be, just to try to learn that and to surround yourself with it, because like I always say, this ain't working at Walmart. We have a bad day, we have a bad day. People can get killed. So that's, when guys try to, I don't know, not want to train that day or whatever. You know what? This is important stuff. I mean, this is a big deal. And, it's just like getting guys out and training that were older guys that didn't really want to, but everybody came on the job to do the job. And so we used to go out and guys would complain about doing stuff as far as training. And then, but guess what? By the time we stretched that first line and did some kind of work, they go, "Hey, I saw this the other day. We did this back at old at Sevens. We used to do this." And we would continue on with the training because they were into it now. So mentorship is important. That's like our Fools organization. That helped us out a lot, to where there was only a handful of us that were going to conferences and doing things. But by getting together once a month or whatever, we could talk it out and say, "Hey, I'm having a rough time over here doing this," or "This guy's busting my balls here. What do you think?" So it's very important. Like, that's kind of what my role is now, is I don't go out and actively teach or do things. When I'm asked, if I can do it, I try. But I don't necessarily agree that if you're not doing the job anymore, you're kind of outdated. So there's some things that, never outdated, like Andy Frederick said, firefighting today still remains largely a gritty, up close personal affair, using tactics and techniques that go back decades. That's true, but just like when I used to teach engine company drills at our local fire conference and other places, when I got promoted to chief, I didn't do it anymore because I wasn't doing that job And same, so now I don't even teach command stuff really. I mean, if somebody calls me, I'm in a little group where I teach basic hose stretches at our fire conference, and then for our training group I'm associated with. And that's because that's what I like to do, and some of that stuff doesn't change. But go around the ballpark. Mentorship is huge. Try to find somebody that you can talk to. And now with texting and everything else going on, you don't have to even say nothing. Say, "Hey man, I'm having a rough day." It could be, it, and it can, doesn't have to be job related, it'd be personal. I mean, this job's tough on people. We love the job, but the job is, it's a, it can be tough. So it's having someone you can talk to. My son's been on the job about 8 years now. I'm glad that I can talk to him about stuff. I'll have guys text me and say, "Hey chief, what do you think about this?" And I can hopefully help them, just because I'm an old guy. For no other reason is that I might have had something happen to me that they're experiencing now. So that's, it's a huge thing. And mentorship can even be somebody of your same rank or time on the job. Somebody who was in your recruit class, somebody you can talk to.
With that, I'm going to ask you, in your personal opinion, What does the term aggressive mean to you? Because
Well,
it is a buzzword in the fire service right now.
I'm not into it. If you're doing your job and you're good at your job, then that's what you are. Doesn't mean those guys are aggressive. Well, it sounds cool, but be a professional. Do your job, know what to do and just do it. And it I don't that we're professional people. I mean, even the volleys, it's a profession. I don't take any difference between volleys and paid guys. It's for profession. And if you signed on and you raised your hand to take the oath, then that's what you are. It's to train, be confident in your skills, train on your skills, and go to work, and be the quiet professional that shouldn't have to be bragging about who you are or what you did. That's why, to be honest, I don't watch a whole lot of internet stuff anymore, just because and the internet can be a great tool. Like for me, if we hadn't been to fires in a while, I told guys, and I used to do it in my classes, we watch YouTube videos. Why get a good fires, just Google fires, get on YouTube, mute it, and run the fire. Whatever rank you are, nozzleman, truck guy, engine boss, truck boss, incident commander, whatever, and just play it out, and then play it out and see how it turns out. I mean, you have to physically say, okay, I'm, truck one, I'm going to go to the roof, we're going to, vent on the whatever, or I'm going to do a search or taking the first line in this first floor. Just say, give an on-scene report and go to work, and do that on a YouTube video. It's great training. So internet is the best thing in the world and the worst thing in the world. I love it for the interaction, just like what we're doing today, but I hate it for look at me and what I'm doing now, And then the guys with the big arguments. I just, I can't get, I don't want to deal with that. All it's going to do is piss me off, and I don't need it. But yeah, I'm not, I'm against the word. Let's put it that way.
Earlier, you mentioned something that you do or that you did that I thought was awesome. As a battalion chief, you pretty much set a standard for your battalion. And if you had a crew or crews that weren't meeting that benchmark, you pull the officer aside and you let them know, like, step your game up. How important is it for departments to have standards? Because I can tell you from individuals I've talked to that are on Wichita has a standard. They're not lowering that standard for anybody. This is the standard. This is where you're going to be at.
It's huge. You're accountable to the citizens, and you're accountable to your crew to and to do the job and to do it the correct way, to be a professional. You have, but you also, if you have to tell the guys what those standards are. Now, I've been gone for a while, so I'm hopefully it's still there and already out there to what the standard is and what the expectations are. But I had expectations, and they were 8 pages thick of what I would give each new guy that came into my battalion. And each member had a copy of those standards. And it meant from station duty to most important thing, going to fires or going to alarms. But it explained everything on paper that I expected. That way nobody can ever say, well, I never knew that. Really? Let's get those expectations out. And then once every 6 months or so, I had every member's email through our city's email service, And I would send the expectations back out, or if I made any additions to it, I would tell them in my daily notes. I used to put out notes every day also. And so that way, in my battalion, nobody could tell me, they didn't know. And if anybody was roved in to my battalion that day, I made sure they got a copy of it. I'd make an attachment on their email. So, shame on you if you don't know what's expected of you. And we'll let you know if you aren't, meeting that standard. I mean, like I said earlier, it's not working at Walmart. It's not, it. I used to hate when they say government work because I feel it were better than that. But, so, it's a life and death job. And it's, and that's just part of it. But that's, I couldn't be a salesman. I couldn't sell you nothing. My biggest deal, no matter what it is being a fireman, was to help people. That's what I'm here. I'm here to help people, whatever that takes. And so having that standard is huge.
Earlier, I don't think we hit on it, but you mentioned it. Commander's intent.
Yeah, I that was part of my transition from being a company officer to a chief. So what, and part of my expectations and our arrival orders, that was part of, I was a big reader, mostly biographies, but also of the Marine Corps. I've got a ton of books and a lot of military books, mostly all Marine Corps stuff, that they seem to get it right to where commander's intent was, I let, it's part of our expectations and also part of our arrival orders is, everybody should know what the plan is. So that way, as a chief, I don't have to fix everything when I get there. Because usually I'm not going to get there a little bit, depending on where in the battalion it is. So I want everything to keep smooth rolling to where all I got to do is I can either take command from whoever's in command, or I can leave them in there and just, I would get on my vehicle and go find them and sit with them because or stand with them in the front yard or whatever, because they had a better vantage point than I had. And so there's a little book, the Marine Corps book. Marine Corps has a book list they put out every year. And there's a little book called The Passion of Command, and it's by Colonel B.P. McCoy. And it's only less than 100 pages, but it's the best book on teaching commander's intent to small unit actions. So, which is directly correlates to the fire service, to what we do. And so that way, everybody knows what the old man expects when he gets there. Everything should be running. That's part of the arrival orders. Everybody's doing their job. There's not a lot of radio traffic, not a lot of chatter, because I used to hate, I'd get there and you'd have to, you don't have time. You're in such a time compressed environment. That's what I hate about the Monday morning quarterbacking of how we do in the fire service. We eat ourselves to where, oh, that was terrible. Why'd they do that? You know what? That guy had a split second decision to do that. And at the time, he thought that was the best decision available. So quit busting his balls about it. So you're doing, as an incident commander, you only have, seconds or, to come up with it. The military, a lot of times they have more time, but still it's the same setup to where everybody knows what you think as far as the incident commander. And so when you arrive on scene, things are going to get done in a methodical fashion. Yeah, you can call an audible, but everybody knows that at the end of the day, when it's over, what the incident commander expects, what he, and I would always do tailboard talks. And at first, this was a thing I learned through the learning process. At first, I'd bring everybody together. Well, I have the whole, I'd have 30 or 40 guys there, and there's guys playing grab ass with each other and doing stuff. It's like, really? Come on, So I finally got it narrowed down where I just bring the company officers together. And everybody used to hate the word critique back in the day because it usually meant they're going to tell you, you've really fucked this deal up, you know, or whatever. So that got to be a bad word. Well, we had tail board sessions where I get the company officers together, and you know, once we started rolling on the arrival assignments and the commander's intent, then you know, it was usually everything's good. You know, we could talk about a few little things, but it was never, you know, too bad. But if there was something bad, then we would discuss it. And you have to be honest. I mean, you got to take the gloves off and go, you know, this wasn't our best day on water supply, or this wasn't our best day on vent or stretching the line or whatever. Here's what we need to do. And then I totally expected those guys, those officers, were supposed to go back with their crews at that smaller unit and talk about, you know, not necessarily what, I mean, they could talk about what I talked about, but also talk about what he thinks, how their crew did. Like, hey, that took a little harder, it took a little longer to force the door than what we were planning. What was the deal on that? That didn't say you did it wrong, just what was the deal? Why, you know, what happened? You know, or you know what, that was a great stretch, went right in, found the fire, got it put out, whatever. Good and bad. Positive and negative, if there is any. So that's all part of the, you know, what my view or my take on commander's intent was. But it's supposedly when the fire's out, you know, what went well and what we need to work on. But to have all that up front, because we don't have time, like the military, they plan some things that you know, when they got Osama bin Laden, they planned for months. They built a whole separate area to train on, you know, to how they were going to do their attack. We don't have that. We got to know our first do area. We got to know our capabilities of our machine, and we got to know our capability of ourselves. And, you know, that's what we have. And other than that, it's a whole new ball game every time we show up someplace. So, you know, we don't have time to reinvent the wheel. So if we keep doing those arrival orders and the intent of, you know, at the end product, this is what we want to see, then that's that, you know, no running in the front yard, nobody yelling, screaming, you know, everybody's professional, everybody's doing our job. You know, the sad thing is on the news media, they only see us when we're coming out, and we're glad that we'd get this fire out. We did a good job, and we're doing the high fives in the front yard. You know,
Right.
that's what they see versus us working professionally that we do. Just the way it is.
Yeah. Okay. Now, yeah, definitely I'm assuming that you're still plugged in with your network of guys, you know, that are still doing things for the fire service.
Yeah.
With that, what do you see the fire service doing good on, and what can they improve on when it comes to recruitment and retention? Because I know of individuals who are applying for Wichita all over the state. But if we're not talking about Wichita, where do you see the fire service can improve on when it comes to other organizations?
Well, and well, Danny, this is, I don't stay that plugged in for that side of it.
Okay.
So I know what we do, and I hear guys talk, but going other places, I don't really know. I mean, guys are, you know, it's amazing to me that we got guys coming from all over to come here, which that's a good thing. And I really, you know, I hate to not answer your question, but I really don't have a lot of that experience to know what's going on at that level nowadays. I hear guys, I got guys all over, you know, but I don't really know what they're doing at as a grassroots level.
Okay. All right. No, no problem. No problem at all. I'm going to pull up another question here. When it comes to leadership, when you decided to start moving up the ranks from lieutenant to captain all the way to battalion chief, what kind of leader did you want to be, and what does leadership look like to you?
Well, I had great examples, good and bad. I knew people I didn't want to be like, and I knew people I did want to be like. You know, one of the reasons I put in for lieutenant was because We had a lot of shitty lieutenants, in my opinion.
Right.
I mean, I can do that. I can do that better than he can. And that's, that's not bragging. That's just the truth.
No, it's a motivator for sure.
Yeah. I mean, so leadership is servant leadership. It's what I believe in. I'm here for the guys, the members, especially the battalion chief rank. I mean, you don't do it for personal reasons to become a battalion chief. It's a lot of sacrifice because you're not one of the guys, but yet you're still in the firehouse. And it moves that way through the ranks. But servant leadership is huge. You're there for the citizens and you're there for the guys. There's some things that, you don't want to deal with, but you have to, as far as somebody comes in and says, "Hey man, I got some stuff I found in my garage. I'm not sure if these chemicals are any good or not." Now, I got to help that guy. I either got to go look at it and then call the hazmat team or tell them, "Yeah, we'll take care of it. We'll dispose of it, or you can take it to the hazardous waste deposit." Anything like that. So servant leadership, and I wanted to be a good leader and a trainer. I don't know. I had examples. I like, okay, let's talk about my Mount Rushmore firefighters,
Okay.
firemen. Number one, Mark Lombardo. Number two, Bobby Hoff, Chief of Chicago. Number three, Bobby Pressler. Number four, Leo Stapleton, the old commissioner of Boston. And number five is my senior man, Chuck Bickle. I looked up to all those guys to what they did and what kind of leader they were as far as a mentor, an instructor, just basically taking care of their people. To make that firehouse the best, whether it doesn't matter if it's busy, slow, whatever firehouse, to make that the best firehouse it can be. We'd go out and paint the doorways and bay doors red, piss everybody off. Well, we're taking pride in our work, in what we do. It doesn't matter if it doesn't matter where you're at. It's the mentality of doing the best you can while you're there. And so I don't know, servant leadership is huge. I said that. It's just teaching your guys to do the right thing whether anybody's watching, at any certain given point. And I don't know, I always wanted to be someone that somebody could talk to me. Tell me what they thought, no, take the gloves off. But then if I'm that leader, then I'm going to make the decision. This is why I'm going to make that decision. And at the end of the day, it's the way it should, it's the way it's going to be. But I don't like a guy that bullshits somebody. I mean, if I've had to transfer people that weren't going to like being transferred. And I'd bring him in and I'd sit him down and I didn't, I told one of my buddies that was my headquarter house captain, later became a chief. I had him sit in on it and I said, it's the, I can't remember what he's called, but just not talking too much. The long pause is what I called it, to where you bring that guy in, you go, you know what, Danny, I'm gonna need a driver out at 17s, which is a slow house. I need you to be out there, start next day. And that's all I would say. I wouldn't try to go, you know what, you've been a good guy. We really hate to do this. We really need, want you here, but, because that's all bullshit. Hey, Danny, I need you to be a driver for 17. Next day, start next day. And then you have the long pause because too many guys, as far as the officer, the boss, tries to make it sound good or they're sorry or whatever. Well, don't do that. Just say what it is and let it go. And it because you're not helping that guy, as far as that situation, by saying, well, I hate to do it, blah blah blah. It's just, it has to be done. Do it and move on. So I don't know. I don't know if I answered your question on that at all,
No, you did. You
but
did.
I don't know. It's when you get old. I'm 67, so when you get old, just things start to get gel a little bit every now. Sometimes the neurons are working. Sometimes that's like I tell guys in my hose stretching thing. Some guys get the good stuff, and some guys can later in the class get the better stuff. Because all of a sudden the neurons and the caffeine will hit, and I'll go, yeah, I remember something. Yeah, we used to sound a room with a nozzle. Blah blah blah.
Okay.
So.
All right. As you started approaching that point where you knew, hey, maybe it's time. I've done my time. It's time for me to pass on this rank to the next person. What was that like for you? Because I feel like when I remember coming into the fire service, I would have the older senior members tell me, hey, just remember, before you know it, your career's done. And I'd look at them like, I just got started. And
Yeah.
looking back at what they said, seeing that I am at year 18, and it's like, did they were right. So at what point did you know, like, it's time?
Well, I didn't know it was time because I thought I couldn't retire. I mean, I was a lifer. I love the job. But so the best thing and worst thing that happened to me is they were going to promote me to deputy chief operations. And so they brought me out of the firehouse to City Hall, working fire department offices, and to be mentored by the outgoing, retiring chief operations. Well, I hated that. I mean, it was just all paper. The battalion chief's hard enough with the paperwork, but this is a whole nother level. And you never see the firehouse. And unless it's a huge fire or somebody gets hurt, you're not going to the fire scene. At least, by the time you get there, it's going to be over. And so it was the worst thing and best thing for me because I'd probably still be in the firehouse now because I loved it. But I'm old and I don't want to be that guy everybody's going, well, I always want to be the go-to guy. I don't want to be the guy that, well, we got to watch out because the old man's here today. Because, time sucks to be as far as being a firefighter, age sucks. Because in my mind, I'm 30 years old until I do something stupid. I took a 4x8 sheet of plywood up on my roof yesterday. And I go, that probably wasn't smart. But in my mind, I can do it. So, it was a good thing and a bad thing. Good thing is I enjoy my retirement. I mean, I didn't realize how wore out I was, sleep deprived, and all that. And it happens, and I'm keep going on how I dealt with it. But for everybody, as a rule, the time to go hits them different, and there's no template for it, I mean, it might be a guy at 20 years. Hey, I gotta go. It might be 25 years, it might be 40 years, but the whole scenario is different for each individual. For me, I mean, I was in an office all day long. I didn't enjoy it. I was, doing administrative stuff that didn't deal anything with training or incident command or operational level. Although I was supposed to be doing operations chief stuff, really wasn't kind of going down that path. It was like doing a conglomerated administrative chief kind of thing. And so I was out running one day and I thought, well, I wonder what day it is, because I really wasn't happy. And I had some other personal issues going on with my taking care of an elder parent. And so it was getting close to August 3rd. Well, August 3rd was my come on date when I came on the job. So I walked into the chief and told her, hey, I'm August 3rd, I'm gone. I said, the only thing I ask for is I want to work a 24-hour shift at the firehouse for that last shift. And I want to walk out the next morning and be done. And she said, okay, that's fine. And so 38 years on the dot. And I really enjoy it now. I mean, I have a 3-year-old grandson. I get to do all the fun stuff of the fire stuff, as far as not making the runs, but going in and talking and busting chops on the, texting my buddies, and a lot of work at the fire museum I'm doing, and I'm teaching a little bit and keeping up with that. So it was a good thing and a bad thing to know. I mean, I wasn't ready to go, I didn't think, but when they took me out of the firehouse, I lost all the passion for it. The passion was being in with those guys and getting the calls and going out. But your body wears out. I mean, that's just the way it is. And I like Bobby Pressler and Mike Lombardo are my buddies, and they're like the Energizer bunnies, man. They're gonna go forever. And I try to keep up with them, but I don't do very well. I mean, oh, I got one quick story. So here's how you pass on leadership things, or even the job. So me and Bobby Pressler were at Christiana. Mike was there and left, and so we're there for another tour. And I'm the irons at that point. Well, no, I just went from the truck back to the engine. We get a call for a fire. We're going to be second due engine. We see a header. We get there, and it's a metal building, 30, probably 30 by 40, 40 by 40 metal building in the back, and it's going. And so jump off. It's me, Bob, and this kid. And kid's on the nozzle. Bob's his backup. I'm the doorman, street making the, getting the stretch ready, going right behind them. And it's funny, as Matt Lund was there, just taking photography and took pictures of all of it. And so come to find out after the fire, it was that kid's first fire on his 21st birthday that we could actually ride out. And so here he's got these two old guys with him, and so we go back to the firehouse, and he says, hey, can I get a picture with you guys? And we go, okay. We took a picture together, and I still use it for training stuff. So fast forward 2 or 3 years later, I go back to Christiana because they let me ride out. And that kid, now I hate to call him a kid because now he's a 30-year-old man, he's my company officer, and I'm on the back of the engine. And that's the way it should be, because he's a live-in. He's been there the whole time. He knows, he's the officer. And and that's the way the department or the fire service should evolve. That's the way it should be. The first time I went to Christiana, Lombardo tells me, you're on the truck with me. And I said, hey man, I'd be a whole lot more comfortable over there on that engine. He goes, nope, you're the bar man. I go, all right, because I'm not a truck guy. I'm the engine guy. And so I'm back cleaning the irons. I got them on the wheel, and I'm cleaning them up and getting them ready to go. And this young kid comes up to me and says, sir, can I do that for you? I said, are you the irons guy today? No. Then no, you can't help me, because that was my job. And what I love about Christiana, you live there. So one night they came up to me and said, hey Sid, we're because you however many people you is what who you have is who you have. So the truck and the engine might be on, or the people are gone, and so you might just the truck, just the engine might be on. He came, hey Sid, we need you to be the OV. Are you talking about being out of your comfort zone? And it's like, okay, man, what's my expectations? You gotta take a 24 and a hook, go to the rear and give a radio report. Because Christiana, right outside of Wilmington, it's hilly. So there might be three or four stories in the back and only two in the front. So you got to give a radio report, set a ladder if you have, And so I said, okay, I can do it. I said, but it ain't going to be pretty how I get that 24 back there, because I'm 60 years old. And they go, we don't care how you get it there. just get it there. Well, I took a class from Mike Chample years ago and about dragging a 24 with a hook on it. That's exactly what I did. But so those were good times. I mean, I went to a firehouse on the road deal back in the early 2000s. They said, "Who all here has ever rode the tailboard?" There's probably 300 guys there. I was the only one that raised my hand. "Okay, we got you today, you know." "Okay, cool." So it's just cool. I've had a great time. Wouldn't change any of it for nothing. And what's good is I still get to go to the firehouse and have coffee with the boys. That's what an old guy hates. He hates leaving the firehouse. So, and he feels embarrassed to go back. So anytime you can invite an old guy to come, have breakfast, have dinner, just drink coffee, it's good for the old guys. They appreciate it. And to tell those kitchen stories. Kitchen stories, you learn more at the kitchen table than you'll learn anywhere else. I mean, there's the hands-on thing, which is I'm all about. But hearing, "Hey, we had this fire once, and here's what it did, and here's how we took it." That's, there's one little nugget in there that makes all the difference in the world. So it's a good thing.
Love it. My last question for you. You mentioned earlier you have a son that's on the job. Is he on Wichita?
Yes.
Okay. What is that like seeing how when you got on the progress Wichita has now made to where they are today, and seeing that your son is able to live that every time he goes to work?
He's pretty much lived that transition in his own young lifetime because, I had a picture of him in the firehouse when he's 3 days old, So he's seen, me and the department go through these transitions. So he's a, it's good to see. It's good for me. I don't know why, but he's a truck guy. I mean, I don't get that. Something went wrong halfway through, but he's a, his goal in life was to be a truck chauffeur, and that's what he is. And it's still cool that he'll send me texts about fires and about what's going on. And it's cool to get that text and to know that, he's making a difference. And I don't know, I think he appreciates it because he saw the transition from where we were to what we are now. And I never pushed him to be a firefighter. I mean, he got out of high school and he was going to junior college and living on his own. And all of a sudden one day, because he was into it, I mean, we did explorers, with junior firefighter programs, and I was a instructor for all that. But then he kind of got away from it. And so, as long as I always tell him, as long as you don't become an axe murderer, I don't really care. Just be a good person. And he came to me and said, "Hey, I took my EMT, got it passed. I'm in the next recruit class." And I thought, "Wow, that's cool." So I got to pin on his, his badge on him when he got promoted or got on the job. And so that was super cool. So it's a proud moment for me that, that he is doing what he likes and he's good at it. So
What truck company is he assigned to?
Truck one.
Truck one. Okay. All
So
right. Well, Chief, I appreciate you coming on. I appreciate you accepting the invite. I will say I have had nothing but stand up, outstanding gentlemen from Wichita, from Chief Neiman to Tim Riggs to Isaac Frazier to Mark Meshack to now you. I appreciate everything Wichita does. Very active. I'm going to use that word, very aggressive, but professionally aggressive with truck tactics, engine work, rescue. It's what the way Wichita is, the amount of jobs that they see and the way they have the standards is why I believe they attract so many individuals. But I truly want to say thank you, sir, for coming on, talking about your history, your upbringing into the fire service and how you view it. I think eventually, and here's one thing I believe, most firemen don't believe that they will ever see retirement, but it comes quick. But when it does, hopefully in your fire service career, you have at least tried to make the next person under you better, as you stated earlier with that example, in Christiana, is we need to pass it forward. We need to pass off good traditions, good standards. So I just want to say thank you for accepting my invite.
Hey, buddy, I appreciate it. I don't do these. I haven't done one of these ever. So I appreciate your time and helping an old man out.
No, not like I said, your name was mentioned, and I was like, I'm gonna try my damnedest to get him on here to talk. So I just appreciate you accepting the invite.
All right, buddy. I appreciate you.
Yes, sir.
If any of the listeners out there are or know of a great firefighter who embodies the principles of being a great communicator, goal-oriented, hardworking, humble, passionate, and professional, regardless of rank, career, or volunteer, contact me at studentofthegamefirepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, stay focused, stay committed, and stay safe.